Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
The first weekend of the 2023 Oklahoma high school football season will long be remembered, but for all the wrong reasons. There were three gun incidents that marred what normally would be a festive time. One in Choctaw, in which three people were shot. One, a 16-year-old Midwest City High School student, fatally. Another in Tulsa, where a student brandished a handgun, but thankfully didn't discharge it. And a third in Locust Grove, where a firearm was confiscated from another student. Even though the National K-12 School Shooting Database reported 11 shootings at high school football games across America, this is not normal, nor should we let it become so. The fact there are more guns circulating in America today than there are Americans underscores the fact that this is a political problem, a problem our elected officials from Capitol Hill in Washington to the State House at Northeast 23rd and Lincoln Boulevard in Oklahoma City refuse to address in any meaningful way. For this week's ObserverCast, we invited someone who knows a thing or two about the gridiron and legislative sausage-making, four-term Tulsa representative and former Tulsa University football standout, Monroe Nichols, to join us to discuss possible ways forward and what is lost if a community no longer feels safe to gather under the Friday night lights. Well, Monroe, it's great to have you back. It's been a while since you've been on one of our episodes, but we thought this would be a particularly appropriate conversation to have with you, given what happened last weekend, given your background, not only in Friday Night Lights, but also at the University of Tulsa. And now you have a son who's you said it was okay to call him a budding star.
Yeah. Yeah,
At Bishop Kelly in Tulsa,
right.
You're,
right.
You know, whose games you obviously love attending.
Right.
So, you know, what's happening here? What should people know about? We've known for years now the schoolhouse is not necessarily safe.
Yeah.
But now, are people? I mean, is this something we're going to have to learn to live with, or can we actually? I think it's a political problem. I think we can fix a lot of it, but I'm wondering if folks are going to have their heads on us. They're going to have their heads on a swivel when they go to Friday night football games.
Yeah, I mean, and thanks for having me on. I always enjoy the opportunity to visit with you, obviously. And the first thing I thought when I saw the news out of Choctaw was that the same thing happened in Tulsa just last year. There's a 16-year-old who was killed outside of a football game here in Tulsa. And, I think about what that means for all of us. In Tulsa, we've had violence, which led to murder at a hospital. There was a kid who was killed at a party the other day. We've now had 2 years in a row where, something that is so core to our culture here in Oklahoma, high school football. We've had a second kid get murdered at a football game. And I think it is about having your head on a swivel. I think about families who may have a kid on the field, but may have a younger kid who, when I was younger, you let your younger kid run around under the bleachers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
The nature of how we have to enjoy and engage in community is completely different. And I think that's a real sad thing, right? And I do think it's a political problem for certain. The fact is, there are too many weapons in the hands of young kids and in the hands of a lot of folks, and we've tried to curb that over the years. And I think the only pathway toward better is getting those weapons out of the hands of folks to make it where they're so accessible these days. I'm not saying that people aren't going to fight. Fights happen. Very rarely does a fight end in somebody passing away. I mean, you were in high school, I was in high school. I got in a fights every once in a while, you know, and that kind of deal. And the folks who I've had fights with from time to time, some of them are some of my best friends now. I can't imagine if somebody would have had a gun in their hand back then. You know, not only would I not have a friend, I could either be dead or I could be in prison over a decision that I made as a 16 or 17 year old. And so we really have to ask ourselves, you know, what the hell are we doing when it comes to this kind of stuff? And is it worth being fearful every time you go to a sporting event?
It just, you know, from the outside looking in, and you've been in the middle of this as best you could in the minority party in the legislature, it sure appears to me that almost any effort to begin to solve this problem is met with fierce resistance on the other side of the aisle. Yeah. And, you know, it's the immediate knee-jerk response is thoughts and prayers. It's a cut and paste response on these things. And it's too soon to talk about this stuff. Let's not politicize this stuff. Or it's a mental health issue, which I think we agree it is to a degree a mental health issue in our society. But the legislature has never really invested, from my point of view, fully in mental health, improving the mental health outlook for Oklahomans at large. So can you take us through a little bit what you have seen in your four terms of efforts to, and I'm thinking maybe red flag laws.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, let's see, it was just in last year, in June of last year, I believe. And what's crazy about the story I'm going to tell you is we had a rollout for what we call the SAVE Act ready to go. And we were just planning the press conference. From the time that we had the policy solidified, there was a shooting at St. Francis before we could even get to the press conference. So like literally the thing that we were going to go talk about, there was a tragic issue of gun violence before we get to the press conference. So what we talked about then was repealing the anti-red flag law. I think Oklahoma might still be the only state in the country where we have an anti-red flag law. What that means is that in Oklahoma, it is illegal for cities or any municipality to put in place a red flag law, which would mean that folks who have been known to be a danger to themselves or others by law enforcement, their family, can't have any of their, you know, weapons removed until they get the supportive services that they need. So this flies in the face, in my opinion, of the idea that this is a mental health issue, because what this says is that somebody's showing signs that maybe they shouldn't have a weapon until they get some services, you know, we're starting to do anything about it. So like, if you think it's mental health, you can't say it's a mental health issue and be for an anti-red flag law, but that's law in Oklahoma. Talk about repealing permitless carry. You know, my family is, you know, my uncle's a hunter. A lot of my family own guns. There's no reason why we shouldn't be requiring folks to have some sort of training on weapons that can take life. I don't think it's a hard thing to ask. I don't think it's a crazy thing to ask. You know, I think it's really important. We see all the time, and it happens here in Oklahoma, people, you know, kill themselves accidentally, shoot themselves accidentally, those types of things. And so the idea that training and a permit is too high a bar to have something in your hand that can take life is also pretty ridiculous to me. And then, you know, repealing the concealed carry in zoos and public parks. I'm not sure why we need those things there. So in addition to those things we want to get rid of, we wanted to institute a red flag law. Like, I think that's really important. I agree with folks who say that mental health is an issue. I agree with folks who say that we need to do something about that. But our mental health services have to have an opportunity to be able to target folks who need them, specifically as it relates to this. We talked about a new waiting period, something that was done in Florida, which, as you know, is not the most progressive state in the country. After Stoneman Douglas, like, you know, waiting periods there, and then legislation to increase the minimum age of purchase to 21. So like, these were things that we offered up just a year ago. It wasn't even in response to what happened at St. Francis, but St. Francis happened before we could even get to the press conference. And if you think about the things that I outlined, would it curb what's happened at McLean High School last year and what happened in Choctaw yesterday? I mean, I think maybe so. You know, But what I do know is that's just a little small microcosm of what's happening across the state. One of the reasons why red flag laws honestly are most impactful is because of suicides. It usually is protect people from themselves so they can get the services that they need. And that is what's hidden in this conversation about guns, is how many people kill themselves, you know, and we don't intervene, so we don't have the opportunity to do it. The last thing I'll kind of say on this issue, and this does cross over into my work as I'm running for mayor here in Tulsa, you know, a lot of mayors in states that have a very similar kind of conservative stint, not, you know, I would say this is primary politics that's inflamed our policy in Oklahoma. I actually don't believe that most Republicans, if you just ask them about how they feel about guns, I think most of them, you know, are about background checks. I think most of them don't necessarily appreciate this idea that you can walk around without a permit and just be on the wild. They got kids, they got families, all that type of stuff, right? So I think this is more so about primary politics and not mainstream views of people on both sides of the aisle. But what a lot of mayors have started doing is started requiring that police departments get the model and make of the guns that are most often or that are used in any act of violence. And that way you keep some sort of a idea of, hey, what are the, what manufacturers have really the highest body count in my community? And what does that say about what we should be doing as it relates to those gun manufacturers? It's, you got to think about how we did with tobacco years ago with those tobacco suits. And what does Big Tobacco have to do now? They lost a lawsuit. They got to invest in these communities that they have infected over the years. I think there's something there that we have to do the same thing with gun manufacturers. These are folks who are making record profits and kids are dying in the streets. I'm not saying that they're making guns hoping that kids die in the streets. But what I am saying, though, is that their product is costing life and there needs to be some accountability around that.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were talking about that, about the opioid epidemic and
how
pharmaceuticals, you know, same kind of thing. It, you know, unfortunately, public policy doesn't, well, rarely turns on a dime on these things. You think about how long it took on tobacco and how long it took, you know, on the opioid crisis. And we're there again. I'm still baffled. Yeah, I'm like you. I remember the days that, you know, Friday night football growing up and everything. The worst thing you really had to worry about was a couple of testosterone filled knuckleheaded teenagers duking it out, you know, throwing a few punches and getting separated. And that was, you know, that was sort of the worst. And that's not the case anymore. What I can't figure out is what is happening that these kids, I'll call them kids, I'm old enough, I think, I'm a grandpa, I can call them kids, feel the need to carry a weapon to the doggone high school football game. It's just hard for me to wrap my mind around.
I mean, I think it's a number of things, right? We think about the kind of language we use as adults, even in the political context about, taking aim at something or whatever the case. So there's a lot of things that we talk about all the time that I think send some subliminal messages, that kind of stuff. I think culturally, the things we see on TV and stuff like that, there's still some romanticizing about like what it means to carry a gun and, you know, how kind of the macho nature of that type of stuff. I think there also is the fact that we can't discount is what we know about brain development. I remember when I was chief of staff to the president of OU Tulsa. This is actually a kind of a funny story. And I'm sitting there, I'm 24, maybe 25 years old. And we're sitting around the table with a bunch of physicians and they're talking about how the brain doesn't fully develop until 26 or 28 or something like that. And I'm 25 and I'm like, oh, okay, well.
I'm not there yet. I'm still developing.
I'm not going to take that personal, right? I'm the only person sitting around this table without a fully developed brain. But I mean, I think that's something that is true, right? And so like, even if our gun laws just modeled what we see about brain development, that would also, you know, be helpful. And I mean, maybe make exceptions for young people who serve in the military and that type of stuff. I know you can go to work before maybe your brain is fully developed, obviously, but I think, you know, some of this is what we already know. Why would a kid do that? Like, you know, how many kids, I have a 15-year-old and I love him very much. He doesn't make the best decisions all the time. I mean, you know, his may not be life and death decisions, but, you know, if I just extrapolate somebody like him who, you know, I think we've tried to make a good life for and everything, doesn't always make great decisions. If you take a kid, really any kid, you put them in a circumstance a little bit different. You put them just in a snap decision on something and you add a weapon into that snap decision. Bad things can happen. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's not complex, as you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a number of situational reasons why a kid might use a gun, but I think we can revert back to what we know about brain development and, you know, what we can probably understand from the communities from which some kids come. But at the end of the day, the question is, how does a 15, 16, 17 year old kid have a gun in the first place? How did that happen? And why are we okay with it? And I think that's the question we have to answer, because it really is our fault from a public policy standpoint that happened. Yeah, we could certainly hold a kid accountable for what they did. That kid should never been in that position on either side of the gun anyway.
You know, one of the things that strikes me too about this, you know, there's sort of I mentioned earlier, this cut and paste response, it often seems, to episodes like this that begins with thoughts and prayers, right? And, you know, and kind of works its way down. But there's a line, and I don't know that the NRA created this line, but I'm going to attribute it to them, or maybe the gun manufacturer, somebody in the, you know, a Second Amendment zealot came up with this notion, which is the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And yet, and we don't know all the details yet, but what we do know is that an off-duty Del City police officer at the game at Choctaw, who, and I could be wrong about this, but I think the district wisely hires a couple of off-duty officers to travel with their team, right, to provide security and so forth, shot a 42-year-old man in the midst of all this. And you know, apparently the initial thought or thinking is that he felt some kind of threat from this guy who I don't think was armed, but you know, it seems to me that what actually is more likely to happen is that something worse happened, somebody who wasn't actually involved apparently in the whole melee, or you know, or was innocent of, you know, who knows, may have tried to intercede and stop or something, you know, like good citizens would,
yep,
ends up getting hurt and spending days in ICU as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I think that, sure, a good guy with a gun is a good thing to have if a good guy with a gun can predict where a bad guy with a gun is going to be every time. And the good guy with a gun has excellent aim and is like John Wick and all that kind of stuff, and nobody else gets shot. Like, that's not the reality that we live under. I mean, you know, I think the fact that an officer saw a threat from somebody and shot them just goes to show you how dangerous it is for folks just to have guns willy-nilly in places, right? Like, you know, I don't know the details, and I have to believe that, you know, that officer didn't mean to shoot somebody, but here's somebody who's trained and who can make that mistake. So what about untrained guy who's a good guy with a gun? You don't think he's going to make a mistake? You know, I think about what we know, like, I don't feel more comfortable with a quote unquote good guy with a gun if my kid's just hanging around with a bunch of other kids somewhere. How do you make the determination on who's good and who's bad? How do you make a determination on the bad guy? Right. I also think it also goes to show how dangerous those situations are for law enforcement. If you think for one second that law enforcement is better off with everybody carrying a gun around and it doesn't make the world more difficult for them, then you're crazy. One of the reasons why officers shoot people, and oftentimes it's people of color, more often, is because they feel like there's some sort of threat. They're not ignorant to the fact that a lot of people have guns that shouldn't have them. You know, and so it's a guess. What are you reaching in your pocket for? Is it your ID or a gun? You know what I mean? Because we have this culture where everybody has one. And so, like, I think it's a good bumper sticker. The only thing to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. But that is not really worked out in practice. You know, show me the times where a good guy with a gun prevented a mass shooting. Show me the times where a good guy with a gun, like I said, you know, just got lucky and was at the right place at the right time. I'll show you 100 times where the bad guy with a gun was able to take life, without I mean, with very little resistance, frankly. And I think that is more often the case. And so do we go with the bumper sticker, or do we go with what we see on the news every day as it relates to folks who lose their lives every day because somebody has a weapon who shouldn't? And I just choose to go with reality and not necessarily with the slogan.
Well, which also brings me to the notion, you know, that, of course, the Congress allowed back in, 2004, the assault rifle ban to go away.
Right.
And so now we have a lot of weapons of war, I will call them, on the streets here in America. And my impression from talking to peace officers, which is, you know, what I call our police, is that they often feel outgunned, you know, in situations. It's bad enough that a guy might be, you know, might have a, you know, semi-automatic pistol in his pocket or something, but, you know, carrying those AR-15s where you can fire off dozens of rounds in a nanosecond, you know, it's holy cow. You know, how do you police that? How do you create peace in that situation?
You know, I'll say this. My dad, before he passed away, was a police officer. My uncle's still a police officer in Dallas, Texas now. And so, you know, I kind of grew up in a law enforcement family. And the scariest thing, I think, for any officer's family is that they're going out into a world where folks who might choose to do them harm or anybody harm have as good of weapons as they have. And we're going to call them to do that job when we're arming the people who are victimizing all of us. And, you know, I've never understood how folks is usually, you know, the track is the same. Folks say they back the blue, but they're going to allow for the folks who are on the other side of those things to have these weapons of war, as you put it. I mean, I think that's a fair and accurate representation of what they're up against. It makes no sense to me at all. Now, I've had people tell me, you know, I live in rural Oklahoma. I need this for wild hogs or whatever the case may be. And there's part of me that can sympathize with that, I suppose. Like, you know, I've always said, I wish people in my rural legislative counterparts listen to me about the struggles in urban communities as I listen to them about the struggles in rural communities. Because my deal is typically, Arnold, I'm like, I don't live there. So if you tell me that's the case, I have to take your word for it because you live it. You talk to people there and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, I've even said, like, look, if those communities are okay with folks carrying around an AR-15 because of the nature of rural communities and you don't have law enforcement who can react quick and you got this other stuff going on that I don't have to deal with, maybe I can understand that, I guess, because you tell me it's true. But when I think about a city that has 400,000 people or a metropolitan area has a million people like Tulsa and Tulsa County does, or I think about Oklahoma City, 600,000 people, and, you know, I don't even know how many are in the Oklahoma City metro area. We don't need those kind of weapons in those type of very densely populated communities because you're not killing animals or you don't need it for protection. It can only be used for one reason only in that case, and that is to take lives that should not be taken. And so, you know, look, my deal is like those weapons of war make it more dangerous for law enforcement, make it more dangerous for the community. And I would say that the only people who carry those kind of weapons around in an urban setting are people who are trying to provoke some sort of violence. People are trying to make a political statement. It's not anybody who needs it, and not even sort of needs it, kind of needs it, might need it. There is no way, like the one great thing about this country, and if you believe in American greatness, at the most fundamental level, when you look at around the world, folks in Ukraine right now and everything like that, is that we don't have to do that kind of stuff here. This is not Afghanistan. This is not the Ukraine. We invest so much in national defense. We invest so much in trying to build really good community. We got a lot of work to do. Weapons of war in places like American cities have no place. And to say anything different is simply, you know, just being, you know, someone who is trying to make a case for something where there is no case. I mean, we don't need it. It's a great thing about being American, frankly. And we trade it every day, and we do it under some political guise about freedom. It's not freedom. I don't feel free going to Gavin's game tonight, fearing that something can happen. That is not what I would consider to be freedom.
Well, you cited earlier when we first started the discussion, the political power of the Second Amendment crowd, the gun manufacturers, the NRA, and so forth in the Republican primary, which is, you know, of paramount importance in Oklahoma these days, obviously. You know, for most of your colleagues in the legislature, getting through the primary is the key, and 100%. trying to avoid getting knocked out there is, you know, is the issue. And so that makes it, at least for the moment, even after Choctaw and Booker T and the Locust Grove Prior game and all that, you know, this season fresh on everybody's mind, and 11 shootings already this season nationwide, it still makes it difficult in many ways for some of these guys who are concerned about re-election at the, you know, at the end of the day, to talk about red flag laws and to talk about repealing permitless carry and some of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wonder what can be done. And one of the things that first jumps out to me is, you know, we're sitting on, in the rainy day fund alone, over $2 billion. Yeah. And in state savings account, billions more. I mean, Oklahoma has never seen a day like this. Thanks a lot of it to, you know, federal dollars that came in.
I mean, almost exclusively.
But it seems to me that if nothing else, colleagues on both sides of the aisle would say, let's take some of that money and make sure that school districts have more of the security equipment that they need for to make the communities feel safer. It won't stop somebody from shooting somebody in the parking lot at the football game, for example, but at least, you know, if you're going through, you know, the gates into the game, there's a metal detector there, you know, like you do when you go to the Thunder games or you go to the OU, OSU and TU football games and, you know, and sporting events like that. You go through metal detectors and have for a long time. A lot of districts can't afford that sort of thing. But it seems to me that if nothing, it might be a small step, can I call it a good faith step to... say, hey, we recognize that this is a problem. It's not the same everywhere, but, you know,
I will say, like, I think we're getting to a place where it's going to be more and more necessary, where school districts are going to have to find a way to invest that kind of stuff. And I would just comment how sad it is that that's where we are right now in our community. And didn't ask me this, but I'll also say in addition to this, some Tulsa schools have been the subject of bomb threats over the years. And I'm thinking about pre-K students who are learning how to go to school, and, you know, under the threat of bombs, literally, whether they're credible threats or not, it's just a reality, right? And what we're teaching those kids. And so you talk about what makes a kid want to pick up a gun. Well, you know, we got some kids learning about going to school with bomb threats. And so it's already in their psyche about the dangers of the world and how you protect yourself from it. Right. But I do think, you know, the state has to be a partner in at least mitigating some of the damage that we allow to have happen. I think the bottom line, though, at the end of the day is that, you know, political courage is hard to come by. And I don't think political courage and taking this, you know, this amazing stance on this issue that, you know, is, you know, going against the grain of your own party. Political courage at this point in our time is just going to your constituents and have an honest conversation about something. The inability to know your constituents and being able to engage them on an issue is really the problem. Because I do believe if my legislative colleagues were to talk to their constituents about some of the dangers and some of the balances that we have to consider and the things that we have to navigate, I actually do think that voters, even more conservative, not all of them, I think there's a majority of conservative primary voters in a lot of these places, not all places. Some places are far more conservative than others. But a lot of these places understand and they get it, and they'll stick with you, but you got to talk to them, right? Mm-hmm. I'll never forget my first year in the legislature was, you know, I made a pass at trying to get driver's authorization cards to folks who didn't have documentation in this country. And I got a lot of phone calls from a lot of different parts of the state. A lot of folks who were saying, why would you give them, you know, this privilege of doing this? And they are not even a citizen and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I called a lot of those people back, and they're from, you know, Durant, some of them. There's somebody from Owosso. There's somebody from Western Oklahoma. And I call these folks back. A, you know, nobody ever calls them back. So, you know,
that was probably a shock.
Illustration of what I'm talking about. But I told him, I said, like, look, hey, you know, this is Representative Monroe Nichols. I know I don't represent you, but you left me a very colorful message, and I wanted to talk to you about this thing. Like, I really, you know, want to visit you about it. And what the conversation I had, and this is a small sample size of folks who are very conservative people, I said, look, you know, the individuals that you're talking about, they're already driving on the streets every day. So there's no privilege given. Like, they're doing that. They're doing it sometimes in a new country. Some of these folks probably actually grew up here. But what your insurance premiums are higher if people don't know the ways of the road. It's very dangerous for everybody, including those drivers and you. And it's going to be reflective in, you know, things just costing you more. I said, in addition to that, and I told a story, and I don't want the story to be construed as to, like, folks are naturally dangerous, but there's a reality. There was a guy who I did some work with, with me at my house, and he was murdered in East Tulsa years ago. And I didn't even know he was, like, he just didn't show up to, you know, do stuff at the house. And then I found out he had been murdered. And the guy who murdered him, he was this guy who I knew, he was from Ecuador. And the guy who murdered him was undocumented, and they couldn't find, he's a ghost essentially. And when I talked to the Oklahoma City Police Department, and I talked to the Tulsa Police Department at the time, they said one of the number one public safety issues, both from a traffic perspective and a crime perspective, is the fact that some people don't show up in the system anywhere. And they're not just saying the perpetrators of a crime, it's also the victims of a crime. So these are folks who are victimized, who have nowhere to go because they are fearful and that type of stuff, right? And so, like, you know, are witnesses to a crime. So, like, you have a lot of folks who, you know, may have witnessed something and are afraid. And so the idea that, you know, I told them that, you know, you say we're trying to make the sanctuary safe. I was like, no, this is about safety. And these are about folks who are living here, and they are contributing to this community. And just like all the rest of us, you know, some of them, you know, on the wrong side of the law, most of them are not, but, like, that's just a natural deal when people are around each other. Right. And we are all less safe if we decide to tend toward, you know, sort of this race-based attitudes about what we think about folks who might not have documentation. And so, you know, I think if you can, and every last one, I'm like, I never thought about it like that. Right. I think the more that you can connect with people, if you care about it, the fact is, I'm not sure enough of my colleagues care about gun violence at school. I'm not sure enough of them care about the impact to communities that maybe they don't represent. It'll only matter to a lot of folks. I think this is the thing that's really difficult in politics, when it happens to them. A lot of folks didn't care about COVID till they lost a family member. A lot of people didn't care about LGBTQ rights until they had a nephew or a son or a daughter or a family member who came out as gay or bisexual, transgender. They didn't care about those things then. The sad reality about a lot of my colleagues, particularly on the Republican side, all good people, a lot of them, amazing people, is that these issues just aren't real until it hits them in the face. And I hate that, because there's a lot of folks who struggle with any host number of issues, gun violence just being one of the many, who need leaders who don't have to have something happen to them to take something seriously. And I hate that about the way that we do politics in the state. And I think it's probably a proxy about how we do politics across the country, but I think it's a reality.
You know, I can't help but think, though, that that is not new.
It's not new.
But what's different, I think, and it wasn't always consistent, you know, politics is on a pendulum and it swings back and forth. And,
right.
And we have periods, you know, where you have really strong leadership that does, you know, is able to marshal the herd and move things forward, and then you have periods where it goes in the other direction. And to me, that what you're saying is an indictment of current legislative leadership and gubernatorial leadership, actually, in this
state. Oh, I think it's true. I think it's absolutely true. I think it's absolutely true. I don't think a lot of people really recognize, like, you know, I'm a four-term legislator, 7 years. It's been an amazing journey to do it, and, you know, there's been some really, really good days. There's some really, really awful days. There's been some trying days. And you think about that from professional to family and everything else along the way the last 7 years. But at the end of the day, I've always thought about this, like, you know, I have to go, and Gavin's now 15. When I got elected, I think he was in third grade or something like that. Wow. I have to go back and look him in the eye and tell him the reason why I'm gone and missing things from time to time is because this is worth it. And it's only worth it if you go up there and you do the best job you can to make things better for folks. If you're just going up there and going through the motions, it's just not worth it. And I don't understand what some of my colleagues get out of it. Like, what's the point of being here? I mean, yeah, you get to make some decisions and you kind of get a little bit of power. You maybe get a bit of an inflated ego. But, you know, when I finish at 8 years, or you finish at 12, or you finish at 2, whatever it is, walking out of that building knowing that you tried to get some stuff accomplished and hopefully got a few things accomplished is the most important thing to me. And you know, not compromising as much as possible is also important. But, you know, if you walk out of there and the state is not clearly better off than when you walked in and you were part of not making it better off, that's an indictment to your family, to your friends, to all the people you asked to believe in you, all the people you asked to sacrifice to say, I got so caught up in that job that I did what it took to keep it. I wasn't thinking about what it took to make my district better or what it took to make the state better. And that's kind of, that's a hard reality with all of us in politics. You get so caught up in what it means to be a senator or a representative or a governor that you kind of forget that, you know, my job is to be a steward of the office. And then I'm going to hand it off to somebody at some point, whether I get beat or I leave or whatever the case may be. And so we don't have enough stewards of the office and stewards of the state right now, people who see it that way. And I think that's a really tough challenge.
Well, you know, it seems to me, too, that a lot of times we see with state legislators sort of pointing the finger at D.C. and saying, yeah, that's really where these things can be dealt with and should be dealt with. And there's some truth to that. It's not, Oklahoma legislature in recent years has certainly done all it could to sort of erode federal influence in this state, yeah, except to take the money.
That's right.
But it seems to me that if, you know, you really wanted to try to move the ball forward too, you have a platform, you have a bully pulpit of sorts as an elected official here in Oklahoma, whether it's a statewide elected official or whether it's a legislative seat. And if you get enough people together and saying, hey, congressional delegation, you need to be taking the lead nationally on helping us solve these issues. We can't do it all at this end. And, you know, whether it's the assault weapons ban, and you talked about the nuance, people in rural Oklahoma who are dealing with, you know, wild boar problems and different things like that, that folks in the city don't understand. But, you know, you also have a Supreme Court that now it might be different now, given the last couple of years, but over the years has basically said the Second Amendment rights are not unlimited. The right. Congress can deal with registration issues. It can deal with, training issues. It can deal with all who can buy, who can and can't right. buy a gun. You know, and so, you know, if nothing else, you would think people might want to take advantage of that bully pulpit that they have and say, you know, hey, yeah, let's see if we can't get the Oklahoma delegation, which in the past has wielded some power in D.C.
Yeah.
and could again if you could unite everybody.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the I think a lot of times, you know, it's a work avoidance deal to say it's a D.C. problem. You know, I think D.C. being gridlocked is what you would imagine. Those folks are about as far removed from people as you can be as an elected official, right? The closest you're going to get is to be on a city council, probably, or something like that. The furthest removed you're going to be is to be a U.S. senator. We in state capitals are in-betweeners, frankly. And the fact is, it really should be our job to do this kind of stuff, right? Because we're closest to community. And, you know, why would we wait for all 49 other states to agree with us to do something that's right for Oklahomans? Like, we, you know, I think it'd be great for the feds to do that. I think they should, for the record. But waiting for that is avoiding the fact that Oklahomans are being impacted by this stuff right now. And you know it because you're here every day. I would love to see a show of hands in D.C. about how many of them know that a kid was murdered at Choctaw High School's football game last Friday night. Not many hands are going to go up. I'm not even sure. I mean, Tom Cole's hand might be the only one that goes up. Maybe Stephanie Bice. I'm not sure that Kevin Hearn knows. I'm not saying that he should, but I'm saying I'm not sure. I mean, like, you know, he may not know that. And I'm not, you know what I mean? It's not a indictment on him, but he may not know that. Frank Lucas may not know that. James Lankford and Mark Wayne Mullen may or may not know that. I would venture to guess that the U.S. Senator in Michigan does not know. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, and so why would we be waiting on those folks to say, oh my goodness, this sad thing happened in Choctaw, you know, call the president, let's do something, right? Why can't we, with our governor that we have now, with our speaker that we have now, with our pro tem that we have now, with the legislative leaders that we have now, all of which, you know, should be smart and thoughtful people, say, you know, high school football games in Oklahoma shouldn't look like this. We got to do something about that. Why wait? Why would we wait on the other thing to happen, right? Like, I would argue that the federal government, through all the money that's come through and all the different uses for it, is probably giving us every resource we need to combat gun violence. In fact, they did have some bipartisan stuff where states could essentially opt in to do things to combat gun violence, and we've not done any of that. And so, like, you know, I would say that, you know, that system's always going to move slower, and it's going to be big change, some of which we're going to like, some of which we're not. But that should not be something we're waiting on to do the right thing in Oklahoma when we know we have a problem.
Well, I know we're running out of time here, but there is something, and you began to touch on it in what you were just saying, and it's kind of an overarching thought that I have about this, or, you know, I wonder about, and I'm curious what you think, and that is, you know, what is lost if a community no longer feel safe to gather under Friday night lights, much less send their kids to the schoolhouse. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, say, oh my God, football, it's, you know, it's the be all end all. I mean, you know, we've seen lately in Newtown and, you know, Parkland and all that, you know, I mean,
you know, I think everything is lost, right? Like, I think one of the toughest things about 2020 and 2021 is the lack of interaction we could have with each other because of the pandemic. And 2020 was the roughest part of that, right? Things like this are going to lead us back to very similar places, not because, you know, you got to wear a mask, or you got to be 6 feet apart. It's just people are going to be too fearful to do it, you know? And I think that is, you know, it's a self, for lack of a better term, self-inflicted issue that we have. Like, you know, I worry not just about football games, but I worry about when I send Gavin to the fair with his friends or to go hang out with somewhere. Like, I would be lying to you if I say I don't have a lot of anxiety about that. I also want him to be able to be a kid who can do stuff and go to college. I have a friend of mine here in Tulsa whose kid is at North Carolina Chapel Hill. They had an active shooter there. Freaks me out. I was like, oh, I made a decision right now. Gavin's going to University of Tulsa, and I'm going to every one of his classes with him every day, right? Like, after seeing that. I mean, you know, that's what you're faced with now, and I hate that, right? But that's the reality that we live under. And so I think, what do we lose? We lose everything that has been special about how I grew up, about how you grew up, about how we all grew up. And we have to make different decisions, not based on, is it raining or not? Not based on, is there a pandemic or not? Based on some sort of risk assessment that you're making based, like, depending on where a football game is, or, you know, that kind of stuff. And I really, I mean, I hate that for everybody. I can't imagine the fear of kids at Choctaw or McLean High School last year, or Booker T. Washington High School this last week. And I don't just mean the high school students, because that certainly is a reality. But I'm talking about the five-year-old kid who came to watch his brother play football. You know, I'm talking about, you know, the cousin or the grandmother who came to watch her grandson play sports, or watch her granddaughter cheer on the cheer team, or watch their, you know, person playing the band, and how much that just gets stolen from these young people and from families. Not everybody's want to go to the next game. And the experience that kids lose out on is unfortunate. And we're allowing, because of public policy decisions, the special things about this state and who we are to be ripped away. I know guns are a part of the culture in Oklahoma. So is high school football. Which one are we choosing here? You know, which one are we choosing? I think we're choosing poorly. And only reason why I say that, one costs lives and one doesn't. And I think it's a hard and sad reality.
So what can our listeners do to advance the ball on this? Anything, you know, or just be heartsick?
I think it's both, right? Like I say all the time, like I wish, you know, we talked before, I wish, you know, my legislative colleagues would spend time talking to their constituents about tough issues. And this is a tough issue for a lot of folks because of, you know, this thought that it only goes one way. You're going to take my guns away. And for anybody listening, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't want your gun, man. Like I got no use for it. But what I do feel very strongly about is, you know, responsibility around it and how do we craft things that keep us safe and allow for folks to be able to enjoy this state and our communities to the fullest. And so what I would say is for anybody listening, have the courage to outreach and go places you don't normally go and have conversations with people that you don't normally have. You know, I've spent some time with the Moms Demand Action Group. They're activated across the state. I would love to see them do forums and rural places, which I'm sure they do, and have people who listen to the show show up to that. Learn and listen to what other folks say. Just because they disagree with us right now doesn't mean they're disagreeable, but like there's nobody that's ever talking to them about the human cost of all of this, right? They don't hear that. What they hear is like, oh yeah, I'm gonna protect the Second Amendment. They don't hear anybody talking about how dangerous that is in communities and thinking about what are some middle of the road solutions that Oklahomans can come up with. People have those conversations. And so I think like, look, we know if we're waiting on legislative courage, it ain't gonna happen. It's gonna be the courage to connect from people in Oklahoma willing to go do that and then demand that that things change in Oklahoma City in a way that a person in, you know, Burns Flat can agree with as much as somebody who lives in Midtown Tulsa. And that doesn't mean that it is all the things that one or the other wants, but for somebody to have that level of respect for somebody who is their, you know, fellow citizen in Oklahoma, even though they live in a different area code and different circumstance, I think that's what it has to be. And so like, if listeners want to do something, I think engaging with some of these groups and saying, we're going to play some road games and we're not going to argue with people and say that they're wrong. We're going to listen and try to understand and express where we're coming from. That's the thing that we're missing right now in our politics. And it used to be leaders who brought us together and galvanized that out of us. We don't have leaders like that anymore. And I don't see them coming back anytime soon. And so it's going to have to be us who make that decision to do it.
Well, Monroe, it's great. Thank you so much for finding time. And you're
absolutely,
you're spinning a lot of plates these days, man.
All good, man. All good stuff.
Well, thanks so much. We'll look forward to chatting again. Good luck in the mayor's race and keep us abreast on what's going on.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for all you do. I know you, you're doing these podcasts a lot. I read the Observer. I appreciate the fact that you all are trying to educate and, you know, bring some elected leaders in and have conversations that are important. And I, you know, there's, at a time where news comes from all different sources and opinion comes from all different sources, it's really great the fact that you have spent your time making sure that folks are engaged and as knowledgeable as possible, and then forcing some of us to have this platform to talk about really important, sometimes tough issues. I don't know if you realize how big of a deal that is, but I can't thank you enough for what you do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.